Thank you. Well, I'm going to call this meeting to order. We'll go around and introduce ourselves. We'll start there.
Tommy Carter, Council Auditor's Office.
Tony Zaboni, True Commissioner.
Bruce Tyson, Southwest CPAC.
Dr. Keyshan Chambliss Hargrove, True Commission Chair.
Charles Barr, representing Council President, Vice Chair.
Raymond Day, member of the True Commission, representing the Southeast CPAC.
Jeff Clemens, Council.
Okay, so we have two individuals are on en route. That's Kim, as well as Daniel. Also, do we have any invited speakers? Are they here? All right, Mr. Freeman. Ready. Thank you for coming.
Good afternoon, Paul Freeman, Enterprise Applications Manager, ITD. I'll go ahead.
Okay, so I know that they requested for you to be here, and I think they had some questions, so we'll allow the, not audience, but allow the team, if they have any questions, we may start now, or unless you want to just get started.
Well, I mean, I don't know what questions they
but
have.
Yeah, if you want to present yourself, you can. However you want to do it's up to you, but they're going to have questions.
Okay, that's fine. So, my understanding was I was coming here to give an update. Last time I was here, mm-hmm. It was regarding the inventory of applications and a process for managing that, or what we were going to do. From my opinion, from my perspective, I thought I was just coming to give an update on
that.
I don't know if it was something else, but that was what I was coming to give an update on.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay, so the most current update is this. We actually just finished completing the first iteration of the system, so it is ready for user acceptance testing. So we're getting ready to work with the business partner to have them go into the system to test it and make sure that it's designed to do what we need it to do. So what this system is going to do is allow us to have an inventory of all of the applications within the city of Jacksonville and all of the users who utilize those systems, so that when an employee leaves or is terminated from the city, they can go to this system and see John Doe had access to all of these systems. So these are the systems where we need to turn off John Doe's access. So that's the whole purpose, the premise, spirit behind the application that we've developed. And like I say, once again, we just finished, it's ready for user acceptance testing, and we're going to be connecting with our first business partner to allow them to start testing the system. If that goes well, we may have to make a few tweaks. I mean, you always find a few bugs with the testing process, but we'll clean it up, and then we'll open it up to other departments and divisions to start the process of logging all of the applications and employees' access.
Can I ask a real quick question there? So when you pull up that individual who has departed and it shows all of the applications to which they had access, are you able to then terminate access by pressing one button, or do you have to go into each of the different applications and terminate that individual?
Some things will be terminated just from the mere fact of the access is terminated from Active Directory, right? Some applications that is not connected to Active Directory, like, for example, Treasury Department, they may have systems that's unique to them because of their function, right? So Treasury Department will go into that particular app and turn off the access. Like, for example, if you have someone in payroll who has certain access to a bank, what have you, well, I won't control that. So they will have to go into that banking port or whatever and turn off that access for that employee.
And that's up to that individual supervisor to make sure that's done.
Yes.
And then what is the check on the supervisor to make sure that they have done that?
Now, so what we're planning right now, the only plan is it's going to send like an email notification. So if Paul Freeman leaves, my manager will get a notification that Paul Freeman is no longer with the system. These are the systems that he has access to. these are the systems that you need to ensure that his access get turned off. So that's where my piece stops at. Okay. That's where I am in the process.
Thank you.
And I think I've asked this question in the past. Is there like a mandatory out processing for individuals so that can,
so yes,
can start?
So let me say this. So the out processing process is an out processing form developed by Employee Services that my manager has to fill out, and that out processing form is what should trigger the whole process of saying this employee's been terminated. You need to, one of the check steps on that out processing form, the golden intent is to update that. So it says, you know, check inventory application so that it's a checkoff list that you've done all of these things to out process this employee.
And I guess my other question would be, like I said, it's probably different systems. One system you have control of, another system someone has control, but ultimately it goes in the hands of the supervisor. So I was wondering if the supervisor doesn't make sure that that happens, like, you know, that particular employee, you know, December 7th, you know, was terminated or what have resigned, you know, should be held, you know, accountable for it. So if they, you know, if that person still has access to those systems, what can happen, you know, is there some kind of repercussions to the supervisor?
I can't speak to that. That's not for me to say.
Yes, sir.
But yes, I understand your point. I think the only additional thing that could be given consideration to is maybe looking to see if there's some type of report that could be generated that shows that, from, you know, you run some type of report that shows this person being terminated and these the systems that they're. Access has been turned off. You may want to consider something like that, but it definitely will be the responsibility of the supervisor to ensure that once they receive that notification that they go in and make sure they do their due diligence in cutting off all of that access for that employee.
You know, Mr. Day and the chair make a really good point. If you're the supervisor, but you're out sick or something, it gets through to you. Do you think that, you know, because everybody gets their final check from the city, do you think if HR just sent an email to whoever the director is to confirm the last payment is there, have all other access been terminated a week or two afterwards, would be a good redundancy taking it out from there and let HR have some hand in making sure that it doesn't fall between the cracks? If so.
That's a fair observation point. I think an excellent point. That would just be something that would have to be discussed with Employee Services to add that additional check into their process.
Anyone else have a question?
Is that a problem though now? Is it a problem?
You mean, no, I wouldn't say that's a problem because most individuals, because really, I'll be honest with you why I say it's not a problem. You normally start the outboarding process. You don't wait to the last day of the employee to go in and start that process because you're trying to make sure you got everything checked off by that last day, right? For example, you got to collect the ID badge, if they collect their computer device, you know, different things. It's just different things you have to do. So you start the outboarding process normally within that last week. You don't. So if my last day is Friday, that's not when my manager is going to start the outboarding process.
Yeah, my experience is that sometimes when they terminate people, they take your picture and give it to security, and that really makes it academic. They don't even let you go back, you know, to your desk or anything. So it's, you know, some people retire, some people, but, you know, I don't know whether you need a redundancy. If it's not a problem, maybe it's not worthwhile, but you'd think it would be very simple for HR just to generate an email to say this confirms the fact they've got their last check, they're no longer there. Have you done everything you need to do?
Well, that's fine. That's fine. From a security perspective, I'm not focused on did they get their last check. I'm focused on did I cut them off access from the system. So it's like two different processes, so to speak. The HR, the Employee Service, is taking care of the payment piece. I'm more focused on making sure that, from a security perspective, due diligence has been executed.
Thank you.
Sorry I'm late, and I apologize if I ask a question that you may have already answered. I just had three questions. The first relates to what you were just speaking to, but in a different vein. I believe the last time you and Ms. Mosher were here, I think yes. It was like a year and a half ago, you had presented to us that you both would be kind of collaborating on a project to get an inventory of all of the
applications
that are not ingrained within the city network. And I know we've still kind of seen a couple instances in which excess access for former employees are still kind of showing up in council audit reports. Jeff has sent us an update probably maybe 6 months ago, a little bit longer ago, where Ms. Mosher had said that the first department or division that had began with the review was hers. And because there's so many systems that HR kind of has, there was an assessment that this was probably going to take a lot longer than you originally anticipated. So I was curious if there's...
So where are we?
Yeah.
Basically.
Sorry, it took a long
time. No, that is perfectly okay. As I was speaking to the group earlier, basically where we are is we have just completed the system to track the inventory of applications. So we're ready for user acceptance testing. So we're getting ready to partner with employee services, allow them to go in the system and make sure everything looks right, make sure they can use the system as designed. If it looks right, if it's working well for them, then we're going to begin to roll it out to other departments and divisions. And so what the system does, it tracks, for example, Paul Freeman. It will track all the applications that Paul Freeman has access to so that when Paul Freeman terminates or is terminated, now someone can go look into this system and say, oh, here are all the systems. We have to make sure that his access is terminated from so that he no longer, you know, can access these systems. So that's the whole premise or spirit behind the inventory of applications on the system that we've developed.
So is it up to each individual manager to kind of make an inventory of their employees' access?
Yes, they have to. Okay. Initially, they have to upload or get that information entered in the system. That is on them. I can't. I wouldn't know what Daniel Henry had access to if Daniel doesn't work in ITD. If Daniel works in ITD, I control that, right? But I can't control procurement and treasury and all those other areas. So every area is responsible for making sure that they enter the correct information for their employees so that they can track and know what excess needs to be turned off.
And do they have to, like, attest that I've completed this review and it's done? And Ken, you're all good. You have an accurate account of
Repeat that again for me now.
Sorry. Do they have to attest that they've completed the review at a certain point?
They don't have to. I'm just going to, my next step is once I'm finished is now. I know what the intent is. So the intent is to meet with every department, every division, and now begin to have, show them how to utilize the system and then begin to have them to do that process. So they'll have two options. They can go in and enter it themselves, go to the system and do it, or I'll have a spreadsheet template. If they feel like the spreadsheet, I would import the information into the application. So that will be the two options available.
And is there a deadline?
I have not established a deadline yet, but I will like to believe that one would be established, but that won't, I don't reserve the authority to say this department has to be done by every day, but what I will be doing is reaching out or having my manager reach out to the directors of the departments and have them push this down, because this was supposed to be something that was going to be pushed down anyway because of the criticality, the seriousness of it. So I'm quite sure we'll see some priorities given to this, you know, from the administration in terms of making sure every department division is doing their due diligence in this area.
And what's the new system called?
It's called called Application Management Portfolio APM.COJ. That's going to be the URL, APM.COJ.net.
APM is the acronym.
Yes.
Everything in the city has an acronym.
Yes.
All right, cool. I'll make sure to put a note on that. All right, my second question to you. When we had the procurement division chief here two meetings ago, he's in charge of having to implement the new procurement code. And a lot of the changes that are going to be involved is putting more information that normally would have to be requested on the city website for it to be publicly available, particularly when you're talking about like open solicitations or documents and stuff of that nature. And he said that he was working with ITD of kind of coming up with a solution to be able to kind of post those type of documents, and also whatever kind of signature, electronic signature company he selects, whether it's DocuSign or someone else to implement that component. From your standpoint, how long do you think that will probably take to kind of?
It's hard to say until I really have a understanding of the full scope of the project. So I can't really give you a timeline in those regards. I can say from a positive perspective that the city is moving forward with electronic signatures in the form of DocuSign. So we're going to see that we will start rolling it out as early as next week with a pilot with hopefully two areas. And then from there, we're going to be looking to bring on other departments and divisions with the DocuSign software technology.
Is procurement going to be one of the first ones, or is it going to be someone else?
Right now, it looks like it's going to be Parks and Rec and Public Works, but I am now, matter of fact, it's interesting that you asked this. I have just started building out the schedule, and within the next couple of weeks or so, I'll know the order in which I'm going to be tackling the business partners in terms of the DocuSign electronic signatures.
And then my last question had to do with OneCloud. I know we're probably in a lot better place with OneCloud than we were during COVID. So I was curious from ITD's perspective, if the city is like fully operational OneCloud and there's not issues that you're still kind of working through with IBM to kind of patch stuff.
It's Oracle, I apologize.
Yeah. And then secondary to that, one of the things that was a big sell for is the public-facing portions that would probably be available. If an administration, past or present, chooses to kind of go in that direction, does OneCloud still have that capability if they wanted to make things more public? Let's just say they wanted to have an open checkbook, or if they wanted to put more financial information in a public-facing portion, does OneCloud have that functionality?
I don't think I'm the best person to speak on that, so I'm not comfortable with that. I would rather defer that to someone else. I don't feel comfortable speaking on that. I'm not the OneCloud expert, so I don't want to indicate that it can do something that it can't do. I don't want to say that. I would say that if it has that capability, I do believe, yes, the city will move forward with it. I believe that, but I can't speak to that.
Would be the best person to ask that?
Wyoni Kendrick. She is the new chief information officer for the technology division.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you. Anyone on the committee has any questions?
Well, this is a basic one. You heard about department exploring or utilizing AI. Or what are y'all doing with integrating any AI capabilities within a?
We're just starting to look into AI. It's such a hard feature, right? But it's one of those ones also. I know it was something on the news the other week. I saw a couple of weeks back, company went into AI and they had a major breach. So it's one of those ones. It's great. It's some amazing technology, but you have to make sure you taking your time and not too anxious and you jump out there and you leave some type of security opening that causes you to have a breach. So we are looking into AI opportunities, but we have not 100% landed on anything as of yet.
Understood. Mr. Day?
Mr. Freeman, just so we maybe have some idea of how everything fits together. The Information Technologies Division fits under the Department of Administration and Finance.
That's correct. Okay. Anna Brochet is
the department head.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any more questions?
Thank you.
Well, we'd like to thank you, Mr. Freeman, for coming
thank
down
you.
And giving us the update.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year to you as
thank
well.
You.
First, before we get started, I want to thank you guys. Definitely thank Vice Chair for covering when I'm not a president. I'm currently a part of the Leadership Jack, so sometimes I'm not here. That's the reason why I'm not here at times. So I thank you guys for carrying on. And of course, you guys are very intelligent people. Thank you always asking all the good questions. I just want to make sure going forward that we make sure that, you know, all members, you know, if they have questions to ask, they get an opportunity to do so. As well as we keep be conscientious of the time because it gets dark early. So if we cannot, you know, if we don't have to wait until 6 to, you know, to exit, have taken care of things because even though right now I'm the only one woman here at the moment, but it gets pretty dark out there, so it's safety. So we make sure we kind of get it in, try, you know, no later than 5:30 if possible. So with that, I ask for you guys to review the minutes and let me know if there's need to be any corrections on the minutes.
I move approval of the minutes as presented.
Second. All right, it's been properly moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimously, has been properly moved and second and has been approved. Thank you. We have no public comment, so now we can go to the auditor's report.
Yes, ma'am, through the chair to the commission. The council auditor's office released one report since the last true commission meeting. A report number 873, the quarterly summary for the 12 months ended September 30th, 2023. Was released on December 15th, 2023. Also, addition, I don't know how.
Excuse me, what quarter was this for?
Fourth quarter, as of September 30th, 2023.
And it was issued on what date?
December 15th.
Okay, I thought you said September 15th. I misunderstood. Thank you.
That's okay. Hopefully I said December. So, before I go through this, and I'll... option, I can answer your, try to answer, I don't have the answers to all of your questions, but I can try to answer some of your questions, or I can just go through the report and then answer your questions.
Yeah, go to the report. I don't want to like, monopolize your time.
Okay, well, you're fine. So, this is, like I said, the quarter, for the fourth quarter for the fiscal year ending September 30th, 2023. Just some general highlights. The general service, general fund, general service district. There was a net overall positive variance of $73.4 million within the general fund, general services district. The however, just need to note previously, there are still adjustments going on with the city's books. And the closing that so the numbers in this report shouldn't be relied on as final.
Real quick question.
Sure.
Refresh our memories. We no longer have Urban Service District 1. It's just the General Services District and then Districts 2, 3, 4, and 5, correct?
I believe that's correct, yes.
Urban Service District 1, the original old city
right,
of Jacksonville,
I believe that's correct.
That was phased out.
Yeah.
When,
yes.
All the debt was paid off. Okay.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just keep that in mind. While it looks good, $73 million, there will be some adjustments coming back and forth to that. So given that, the finance department's report shows a negative variance of $1.9 million in I'm just going to shorten General Services District to GSD, if that's okay with everybody. GSD total revenue, that's mainly driven by negative variances in debt funding, debt management fund, general fund loans, and charges for services and miscellaneous revenues. The negative variances for debt funding is showing a negative variance of $37.5 million. And that's basically due to two projects where borrowing was not needed because there was no funding that was going to be expended in fiscal year 23. And that is the Florida Health and Finance Technology Graduate Education Center, the University of Florida Health and Finance Technology Graduation. That was in the amount of $20 million. And the JPA Fulton Cut Crossing Power Lines in the amount of $17.5 million. That is the project to raise the power lines. There was set aside for this fiscal year, but the projects didn't go into full swing, so the funding wasn't needed. So that's why. And it's let's see. So that's that one. And then the general fund loan revenue shows a negative variance of $3.5 million, and it's due to a reduction in the solid waste fund loan amount, which was recommended in the fiscal year 21-22 recapture. However, this is offset with a corresponding positive variance of $3.5 million in expenditures based on a reduction in solid waste loan needed to cover the cost in 21-22. So you have that. And then charges for services had a negative variance of $2.4 million. This is mainly caused by less revenue and home detention fees for JSO by $1.6 million. And then medical examiner service fees of $1.1 million. And then and miscellaneous revenue had a negative variance of $1.9 million, but adjustments related to prior years, adjustments related to prior year receivables have changed the variance to a positive $4.2 million. And so that'll have a positive impact on the overall budget variance. And so, again, this is a moving, we're reporting on a moving target, so. For the positive variances in revenue, ad valorem taxes showed a positive variance of $6 million due to final property values being higher than preliminary values. Ordinance 2023-605 appropriated $2.2 million of the available revenue to purchase specialized equipment for the supervisor of elections. So that reduced the favorable variance to $3.8 million. And then there was an adjustment to ad valorem taxes posted after the report was submitted to our office that has increased the revenue by $8.8 million, which would increase the positive variance in ad valorem taxes to $12.6 million. And that will have a positive impact on the overall budget variance. State share of revenues experienced a positive variance of $22.5 million, primarily due to additional revenues from municipal revenue sharing sales tax of $10 million, county revenue sharing sales tax of $5.5 million, and state shared half-cent sales tax of $3.9 million. The overall variance of $22.5 million is overstated by including an additional 2 months of revenue totaling $900,000. That amount's overstated by $900,000 that was associated with fiscal year 21-22 for the constitutional gas tax. So that adjustment will have a negative impact on that budget variance. And then on the expenditure side, the GSD expenditure variances show an overall positive variance of $75.4 million. The largest component of the budget positive budget variances are the $23 million in grants, aids, and contributions, and that's this is the other side of that of the $20 million for the University of Florida project, and then the $17.5 million in other uses, debt funded due to not spending on the JPA Fulton Cut crossing, and then $3.5 million reduction. So that's the main drivers for the expenditures positive variance. excuse me, Office of the Sheriff overall is projected to have a positive budget variance of $10.5 million. And that's overall. I will say that there is a bill that's being introduced that will probably take about $9 million of this.
What does that bill do?
It's for the jails. There's the door, maybe not the doors, I think it's CIP, but mold issues in the jail,
okay.
Things like that. So that's being introduced by, I believe, Councilman Boylan. There he did.
That's part of the direction of Council President Salem's special committee, which Councilmember Boylan has chaired.
Correct.
All right.
$9 million in.
Right.
Sorry.
So.
$2,000.
It'll draw down on that $2.5 million, not directly, but by taking from reserves as to go in. So the net effect. And then the Patrol Enforcement Department has a positive variance of $7.4 million, and that's primarily due to positive variances of $4.7 million in personnel costs due to vacancies and $2.3 million in internal service charges, primarily due to savings in fleet internal service allocations, and that's mainly based on reduced fuel costs compared to what was budgeted, and also the timing on when the vehicles were received, which reduced the billings for the new vehicle purchases. And the Corrections Department has a positive variance of $5.6 million in expenditures, and that's due mainly due to positive variances of $4.4 million in personnel costs due to vacancies. Let's see. I think that's all on, basically that covers the highlights of the general fund. For the independent agencies, JEA's electric system shows an overall surplus of $28.1 million. Water systems, an overall surplus of $16 million. Both electric and water will have to have budget amendments, and that is due. Electric has to have a budget amendment for their use of $40 million of use of reserves to fund Vogtle payments in the future. So they pulled from their reserves, but they needed, of course, they wasn't budget, but wasn't appropriated, so they have to. And also water and sewer, $26.6 million approximately of their reserves are used due to the elimination of the environmental fee. So that's why they're having to submit a budget amendment. JTA, their 22-23 budget was $173 million overall. They had balanced budgets overall. However, bus, connection, and ferry exceeded their budgetary authority by about $2.2 million. Bus exceeded by $863,000, connection by $677,000, and ferry by $703,000. And I'll go ahead. That's one of your first questions. So I'll, Commissioner Henry had sent an email to Jeff, copied me. Basically, the question was, does Council Auditor or Legislative Services know when JTA will file legislation? So JTA's board took action on 12/14 at their 12/14 board meeting. I'm under the assumption the resolution passed. So JTA then will need to work with OGC to prepare the legislation. And they are in the process of doing that. I actually got an email right before I came from JTA's budget manager asking, you know, have I received anything? But it will have to go through OGC to prepare the legislation to get it ready. Then our office will see it to start to, we'll look at it as part of our legislation review that we do.
I'm just glad that they're doing, because I know in the past they've waited eons to.
Well, I will say this. Last year their board also passed it this early, but it didn't get filed until October. So hopefully this year they're a little ahead of the game.
I'll reserve judgment.
Yeah. that was the whole reason why Council President was not happy with them. So for JPA, the Port Authority, they had a balanced budget with a $13.5 million surplus at year end. And that's mainly due to cruise ship revenue was up, and also they had better than budgeted investment income, and as well as lower debt cost. JAA, they had a surplus of $47.8 million, and that's mainly due to a reduction in operating capital outlay dollars, and that's due to delays that was in Concourse B. $47.8 million of surplus.
And
So getting, and then JHFA has an overall favorable variance of $1.3 million. That's mainly due to the payback of loans and higher bond issuance fees than budgeted. Also, Commissioner Henry had another question, and that was on the city venues. His question was ASM funds has $11.6 million. Well, that's quoting from us. His question was, can I get more specific information on what expenses were and if the facility manager received prior written authorization? Because ASM, the city venues ASM, did exceed their budget spending authority. Now, by the city, they are allowed to, per their contract, once they receive written authorization from the city. I will say I have a partial answer. Yes, they can exceed the budgetary authority with the written permission. My supervisor worked on this part of it, and she is still out, so I don't know the answer to that question. Okay. Which I will, when she gets back next week, you know, I'll send Jeff an email and just put it out that way with your answer.
That'd be great. And that tail end of that question is really important too, because I'm not alleging something, but I'm just really curious. They had a surplus of about $9 million. They overspent close to that. I'm just curious if that was the reason why they felt comfortable with exceeding it that far.
Right, right. Well, apparently the 14 or the 14 positive variance revenue was due to, I guess, higher price. They had higher revenue than budget from Ticketmaster and things like that. Also on question 3, can we get greater detail on the leave payouts? It's based on the mayor's office had a variance, and it was mainly due to leave payouts of $508,343. Commissioner Henry asked particularly who and the amount. This is partially for COVID-19 leave. Also, it's for all terminal leave as well. I reached out to employee services. We were not aware and don't believe that this is, they did tell me this is not really a system generated report. You have to pull each person. We're still working on pulling that as well. I got your email when I got back Tuesday, and we're still trying to work on that.
Main reason I asked that question is because I remembered when the articles first came out about the large volume of people that got COVID leave, like it was a huge liability, but no one's publicly hasn't really kind of talked about it since then. So I'm just curious to see how large the
of who all still has it. So you also want to see, I guess.
I'm not asking for that yet. I just wanted to, I was curious about this one first. That was gonna
who got it? And it's just the COVID leave or just the terminal leave period?
No, the COVID leave. The terminal leave I'm not concerned about because.
Oops, for a second. Anyone else has a question?
That was the last question, and that concludes my report.
Tommy. Okay, so let's move on to committee reports, audit committee. Ms. Carter?
Legislative.
Okay, you are. Legislative for tracking committee, anyone work with him on that?
That was Carter and me.
That was Carter,
and
okay.
I haven't had a chance.
Gotcha. Thank you for the correction. Okay. Chair's comment, I don't have anything. It's a good, happy new year again to you all, and good to see you guys. Old business, looking at the bylaw revision again.
I'll be glad to speak to this issue since it was sort of my idea.
Yes.
Those who have an idea usually have the burden of explaining why the idea originated. So as you can see from this document, according to the information that was sent to me, that the last time the bylaws were amended were November 18th, 2003. I'm told that they were amended at some point after that, but nobody really knows when. So we'll go with what's on the record. So I proposed these in June of 2023, and the normal text indicates the provisions relating to the commission out of the city ordinance code. The italicized text indicates parts of the bylaws that were adopted independently of city ordinance by the true commission itself. So it's pretty straightforward. Anytime you see a yellow highlight, that represents a change in the current text. So there are no changes in Article 1 or in Article 2. Article 3, membership. The first change is inserting, and again, this is my personal proclivity, and I apologize if people disagree. We can discuss that. I'm a big fan of the Oxford comma. So you'll see under Article 3, Part A, after the word qualifications, inserting a comma. Article B, for some reason, it had 12 members shall be residents of the city, and then six residents of the city appointed one by each of the citizens' planning advisory committee in the six planning districts. All to be on the CPAC, you have to be a city resident, so I just inserted all members of the commission shall be residents of the city to make that all-encompassing. No changes anywhere else until you get into Article 5. A little bit of change in diction on Article 5, Part A, 4, suggestions for improvements in strike of and insert to the city's long-term financial strike soundness and insert sustainability. Part B, to conduct it strike a limited number, since that's really vague, to conduct in-depth studies, okay, each year of specific high-priority financial issues, period. Make recommendations to the mayor and council for improvements to the city's long-range financial planning, budgeting, management, and sustainability. Sources of topics, no change there. Under Part C, inserted the term neighborhood associations because in order to be recognized and have a representative on the CPACs, neighborhoods have to actually form an association. They don't have to be incorporated as an entity, but they do have to form an association and register with the city as an improved city association. D, to review the council auditor's reports and its independent agencies, period. Second, next sentence, and creating a new sentence, report findings to the council audit committee on a quarterly basis. Part E, strike as such need is identified, because again, that can be vague.
With the chair to you.
Yes,
I mean,
sir.
If it's the duty is given by the to the commission by the mayor, that would, I think, when so directed, would be redundant, because if they're giving it to us, we're being directed, I would assume. So I don't know that we need when so directed there, but to perform such additional duties as may be given to the commission by the mayor and or the council. I'm not trying to be.
Well, it's not so, it's just that when we are directed that we would perform those additional duties.
I'm just saying if the duties were given to the commission, then I guess that's fine. I'm just.
It'll be performed. I think I'm listening to what you were saying.
I'm just saying I don't think we're so directed because additional duties is given to the commission by the mayor.
I mean, why don't we do this?
We can leave it the way it is.
I'm willing to entertain changes. I don't have any great pride of authorship over this.
Right.
We could insert change that to perform such additional duties when assigned to the commission by the mayor and or this council and strike all of that remaining language. To perform such additional duties as strike may be given to. In
and in lieu of may be given, insert the word assigned to the commission by the mayor and or council, and insert a period, and strike the remaining. So we would simply be striking as such need is identified. Okay, part F. How is that?
Can you read that?
Okay, this
as
is
a
how
sentence now?
Yes, as a read, it would read to perform such additional duties assigned to the commission by the mayor and or the council. Period. Okay. All right. Part F, to receive grants and donations from foundations, institutions, organizations, inserting a comma, and individuals for that context implies that that word should have been expanded funding as opposed to expended funding, unless that was the intent of the ordinance code, Jeff?
I'm guessing typo.
Okay. All right. So do we need to have the ordinance code amended as a Scrivener's error?
Probably.
Technically? Okay.
Technically,
all right. Yeah. All right. Anyway, that's something that you can take up, Jason.
Yes, sir.
This is new to me. So we can go out and solicit money for Mr. Henry to have a party for us or something, or does it go to the general fund? Or does anybody ever?
It's never been done.
No.
It's never been done. So
we didn't really. Nobody really had recalled this as being one of the opportunities until we started this process.
Do we want to be in the business of solicit? I mean,
personally, I don't. I would have no problem if we would like, although this is in the ordinance code. Now, anything we change that's in the ordinance code language, we're going to have to request that the city ordinance be amended. So my suggestion would be leave it as it is, but as a matter of practice, just don't never take advantage of those powers. That would be my recommendation.
I mean, if it came in, would it go to your personal account, Madam Chair?
No.
No. No. How do you feel about it, sir?
Yeah.
Okay. I would just say
the commission may receive grants and donations,
right,
not individuals.
We don't have an account, though, do we? We don't have an account. It just goes to the city general fund.
Well, yeah, that's why the operative at the end, we're subject to the approval of the mayor and the council. I think that's the implication that whatever in that theoretical world, whatever donation would be received would be intake by the city, and then they would have to approve its use.
So you're saying the city, we could go out and solicit it, somebody could give it, and the city could just keep it and not give it to us?
Theoretically, yeah.
Theoretically, yes.
Okay, that's fine. Okay.
All right.
Are you, just a second.
I mean, I'm the same way. You can leave it, but just don't go soliciting money. Plus, you have to be careful. You probably kind of got to be careful ethically how you solicit this money.
Exactly.
I'm rereading this, and I'm thinking maybe I am incorrect. Let's reread this. To receive grants and donations from foundations, institutions, organizations, and individuals for expended funding to carry out its duties. I believe that probably the context is actually correct, and I stand correct myself. So
I agree with you on that. I just I didn't want to.
No, challenge me. That's what this is all about. We're trying to make sure.
So leave expended,
and
get rid of expanded.
Correct. So I reread that, and I said, wait a minute. Okay, all right. So then we move into Article 6, officers.
Go ahead.
Can we go back up to B under Article 5?
Yes.
I'm trying to read this. It says make recommendations to. It doesn't read like a proper sentence.
Correct.
There's something left out there.
The infinitive to should be inserted, I believe, after I've gone back and read this a second time.
In-depth studies of your branch party issues, and then it just goes to make recommendations. It just seems like there should be. I don't even like the word two because maybe we're not doing it to make a recommendation. But
well, read the original context.
Yeah.
To conduct a limited number of in-depth studies each year of specific high-priority financial issues, leading to recommendations to the mayor and council for improvements in
the city's long-range financial planning, budgeting, management, and soundness. That was the original language.
But
you're privileged that we leave this in place and not make any changes, but leave that as just a compound, complex sentence.
Well, the in-depth studies doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to lead to any recommendations, et cetera, on the rest of this, you know, to make recommendations to the mayor council for improvements to in or to whatever, which you want. But you're inferring that the study is being done strictly to make some recommendations to the council and the mayor's office,
et cetera. That's in the ordinance code.
And we may take up an in-depth study just to see if they're doing everything right. It may not lead to, but the way you've got it, the way it's written here, it's saying that the only reason we're going to do these in-depth studies is to make some kind of a recommendation. That's the way this is written, and I don't know that that's the reason we take up a study.
And may.
Yeah.
And may.
May being the operative.
Let me, and I'm sort of rethinking this a little bit.
Okay.
Let me just double check something. As I am now seeing what monster I've created.
Okay.
As Frankenstein once said, I believe that all of my proposed changes in Article 5 should not occur because we're changing ordinance code.
That's what I was about to say. I was just sitting quietly as I was reading.
All right, so
it's word for word.
Yeah. So I think we just leave anything in Article 5 as it is. Okay, so you can disregard any proposed changes to Article 5.
Unless the chair wants to go and advocate for them to change the ordinance.
That's a different. We can discuss that down the road.
Okay.
Yeah. I meant that as a
I know you are.
Well, I'm serious. Yeah. All right. So shift back to Article 6, officers. This is where I made the most substantive changes. I changed the language so it's gender neutral. No more chairman, vice chairman, et cetera. It's all just chair, vice chair. Although I firmly believe that Council President Salem intends to fully utilize all six of the council president's appointments. This commission is going to increase in size. The CPACs, when they fill their vacancies, we would potentially be at 12 members. If and when the mayor ever decides to implement any of her appointments, we would be sitting at 18. I thought, well, if we now have enough, you know, horsepower to crank this guy up, why don't we, or this commission up, so I'm not using gender language, why wouldn't we say, well, let's have one section that looks at taxation and revenue and another section of the commission that looks at utilization of expenditures. So I came up with the idea of creating two separate vice chairs, one for each of those areas of review. And then it goes on down. You see the elimination of the gender references. And then under general duties, the original language is appoint the standing committees. You should appoint members of the standing committees. And then as I looked back through, I don't believe we actually have, here we are, okay. We don't even have any standing committees. Under Article 6, Part E, committees and duties of committees shall be established by the commission or chair as needed. A committee should generally be comprised of at least three commissioners, a quorum of any committee. So we don't really have standing committees, according to the bylaws.
Yeah, because we outline them in the policies and procedures.
Okay, all right. So let's address that then.
Okay, we're looking at it. I'm going to make a statement
Sure.
on A. I think once, you know, hopefully in the future we'll get, you know, it's been a long time since there's been about 18 members on the committee. It's been a long time. And hopefully that'll happen in the future. But I would say in reference to that, I think that'll be, this will be good for the future, but not now. I mean, as far as the, you know, if, like I said, it's been years. I mean, his name was Hassan or something. He was a realtor that was the president years ago. We had a whole bunch. And when we did do that, it, you know, you had your president, your vice, all the other officers, as well as your auditor committee, as legislative, and it worked fine. It worked fine. So that's just my take on it. I don't feel that you have to have, a chair here, vice here. That's just my take on it. I mean, you guys can put your input. That's my take. My two cents.
I agree with you. I think that that's an easy fix for both of you. Instead of the word shall, put the word may. And if the chair determines that it's necessary, we don't have to go back and amend anything.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds good. How would you like,
Well, you kind of, I think you do have to make a change.
Okay.
However, I'm with you. I don't think we need two vice chairmen, but these bylaws may be amended at any regular meeting of the commission by a two-thirds vote, so long as there's advance time. So all of a sudden, if the council president and the mayor increases this to 12, 15, 18, it could be a motion made at that meeting to get a vice chairman and next meeting vote on it by two-thirds vote.
That's fair enough.
Right. That's fair. Right.
So then under Article 6, officers, it would just be officer of the commission shall be the chair, vice chair, and secretary.
If we're still on officers.
Yep.
So I personally don't have a issue with the striking the gender, although I don't think it's necessary. I've set another while I'm waiting for this one. I've set another commission. I don't even know what they are. I just walk in and listen. And they still refer to chairman or chairperson or I haven't seen a woman, or maybe it would be chairwoman. Though I don't have an issue changing it. I don't see that it's necessary, but I'll go along with it. I'm good with it.
So he's looking at gender, and you said instead of chairman, because sometimes it's us. And I'm
so you're not chairman Hargrove. You are chair Hargrove.
Correct.
Yeah.
I agree.
I think
that
in the last 15 years, growing up, but I think in today's world, that's proper.
Yeah. And I just think that a formal document such as this should reflect current usage and practice. So, all right.
Agreement with that, yeah.
Okay. So that would be the, and then the other changes in Article 6 under Part C, just go on further. In the absence, disqualification, disability, comma, or direction of the chair, vice chair shall exercise functions, again, removing the gender references to the individuals of the commission. So with that said, I move approval of these bylaws as presented and as amended on the floor through our discussions, although we didn't take a formal vote for each of the individual things we discussed. But so I would present these for approval. I move approval in its totality as amended in our discussions.
Questions, anybody?
Assuming that there's no condition precedent with a modification of the code by doing this with the changes that we have.
That's why I decided we should strike any proposed changes in Article 5, since that is the ordinance code, and we don't have the power to change the ordinance code.
Exactly.
Today, based on that, I'll second your motion.
All in favor?
Discussion first.
Discussion, I apologize. Discussion? Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm just curious, there was mention made of not making any changes to Article 4 and 5 because they were direct ordinance. Article 3 mentions an ordinance code as well, so are we not making any of those changes?
That one I looked at. I don't think we need to, because in the ordinance code it subdivides the appointments of the mayor and the city council president together and the CPAC appointments separately, and in both of those sections it says that all three category types have to have a financial planning interest. So by us saying all in this all-inclusive language, it doesn't change the meaning of what the order says.
She does make a valid point in that Article 3, Section A,
Article 3, Parts A through D are ordinance code language and consistent with my discussion or my recommendation on Article 5, I would say that we strike any proposed changes to ordinance code language so that would read, our bylaws would still continue to read 12 members shall be residents. Good catch.
So let me be clear on the motion.
He proposed an amendment.
Where we're at now, basically the only changes are going to be in Article 6, right? And we're going to strike the change that was put in for the second vice chairman and get rid of the gender. Okay. And other than that, there's no changes. Okay.
I know this is part of the ordinance code, so we can't change it, but it just seems something wrong when you have commission has 18 members and then the next one says 12 members.
I know, I was looking at that too.
You know,
I was
in the ordinance and wait till new business.
Okay, because it's, yeah. I was looking at that. Eyeing it as well.
So, just so that for the record, just so that we are fully cognizant of the motion. Is that the motion that I presented and Mr. Zabuni seconded, no changes in any of this document that pertains to the ordinance code. The only thing that will be changed is the section, Article 6, which were the bylaws adopted by the commission itself. So with that...
You're changing the motion.
No, I'm just restating the motion so that to catch what you caught up there. So.
Technically, the original motion was amended when you struck out all and you went to 12.
Uh-huh.
So there was an amendment. If we were going to do it like the city council, we could vote on that amendment.
So I'm just restating my motion, if you would accept.
Fine.
So we now have a fully valid motion on the floor.
All right. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone against it? Okay. And it's been properly moved and seconded and approved. So it's done.
Thank you.
All righty. And we are on new business. New business. Mr. Day.
Under new business. In light of, I will call it a longstanding practice that I think goes back to the Alvin Brown administration, and I believe was carried through all 8 years of the Curry administration, and so far under the current administration, they have made no appointments. The mayor has made no appointments to this commission, unless I'm wrong.
You're correct.
Okay. So at the next meeting, I will present a proposed bill to amend the city ordinance relating to the True Commission. My bill, and I'll sort of preset it here, will recommend that the full commission be completely restructured with each of the 19 council members having one appointment and the 6 CPAC members continuing to function as stated. So that I believe if we do that, the city council will take greater ownership in this commission, and I think we could generate a much higher degree of citizen participation and therefore citizen input. So I will bring that to the February meeting as a drafted bill.
Through the chair. So then that would be 25 and the mayor would have no say.
Correct.
Yeah. Go ahead.
That's going to... So I can see where that's going to be a bit messy.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh.
Very messy.
Yeah,
in that you have people that are on this commission now that have already been appointed by certain council members, and how is that going to work? Just things for you to think about when you're drafting your proposed bill here. I know some people, I think Daniel may be one of them, has been on the commission for quite some time. And you were appointed by
the
president
we're all council.
President.
Yeah, on the council appointments, we're all council
presidents.
Okay, all right. So, you know, that's going to be kind of, could be messy. And I just want to, you know, who do you kick off? You kick off the commissioners that were appointed by, you know, others. And I'm a CPAC representative. So, are we kicking off our chair and Daniel?
No. What I would.
Are you a CPAC or you're a
council
as well? So we'll kick off these three at the head of the table.
Well, I think. And I think if you were to evaluate our geographic dispersion, I think we probably could all fit with one of the current city council members. In lieu of that, I would recommend that these positions only those appointments only occur as a vacancy were to occur, and there would be no longer an individual from that city council district.
You about to say
25, Madam Chair, I think 25 is unmanageable.
Right.
It really is. Plus, it gives us a huge number for a quorum if we're going to conduct any business. Uh-huh. Assuming we could get 13 people here.
Right, right.
So I appreciate that.
I know. Right. So I'm going to disagree.
And another way to do it, too, from being on the Civil Service Board, too, the Civil Service Board has the ability to appoint, the board members have the ability to nominate and appoint somebody to sit on the Civil Service Board.
I'm not a fan of that, but I think we have to do something to get the administration off of its derriere.
Okay, so I'll reach out.
The chairman talking
Let me, to yeah, you. Let me say something. I would reach out to the mayor office. I will. And I mean, okay. The person that's actually putting people in places.
Well, I can't get that person to ever call me back.
I did get him to call me back. So I'll reach out to him again. But I'm not comfortable with all 19 city councilmen to appoint someone to be on this committee. I'm just not. Go ahead.
Mr. President, is it possible for each of us individually somehow get hold of the mayor's office?
Yeah, we can.
And express to them, I've talked to one of the councilmen about getting the rest of them from the council president.
He just did one.
Oh, he did another one?
Yeah, Lake Ray, I believe.
Okay, well, there's five. Yeah, he's got one more to go.
And I believe
I'm a member of the North CPAC, and I know there's one more CPAC missing. I don't know who it is, but the North CPAC is one of the two missing.
I believe it's Urban. No, you're Urban Core.
And I'm hoping that the North CPAC will appoint somebody to the commission.
It is the North CPAC.
But, I mean, perhaps even if it's an email to the mayor, if they don't want to answer. Look, I've tried getting hold of the mayor for things, too, and I can't. But if we send an email or get a generic email and each one of us send it to the mayor, let her know, hey, make
an appointment. And telephone call.
To get Garrett's attention.
Yes.
Because
push it again. Push
I have
button.
Submitted a name to who had – a person applied for appointment via the mayor. Nothing has happened. This happened in July. After she took office, nothing has happened, and I can't even get Garrett to call me back. Mr. Salem's office yesterday agreed to appoint that individual, using one of I think to fill Carter Jones' vacancy.
I'll like I said, we can all send an email, but I would reach out. I'm gonna do it. I promise, and I have, and I'll get back with you. With everyone next month about
can
that.
Can I just suggest this, having been worked in the government, you know, y'all paid my salary, as did he. For all of us to send an email or something, I don't want to create a public record to suggest that this mayor is not doing something that she should be doing and not fulfilling her obligation. I think it'd be...
I'll do it then. I will do it, and I'll make the phone calls and email.
And do this calmly. Is better with honey than to try and do with vinegar, I think.
Yeah, he's correct. So I will be the one to reach out via email as well as a phone call. And I will report back next month. So, good with that?
Just an inside note.
Yes, sir.
The Park Safety Council has had two names trying to be approved 4.5 months. Before we got a new administration.
I don't know what it's still.
So it's... There's a backlog, is what we've been told. There's a backlog of, but you know, how long should about? We can't even conduct business. I haven't been able to get a quorum now for 7 months, and so I'm about to lose two members I have. because we can't. We've got a. They gave us the thing to write the standard park safety standards. We've had them written for 8 months, and we can't get them approved because I can't get a quorum.
Can I just suggest this? I used to be on the civil service board. I only served because I was on there before, and they couldn't get anybody on it. Steve Rohan retired, and they couldn't get a quorum. I mean, so this isn't something new to this administration or anybody else. This is a problem. I would suggest, just knowing how government works, that the chairman doesn't go to, that she goes to either Karen or to Donna Deegan herself, because things flow better down than to flow up or sideways. If the mayor or Karen says to the person in charge, I want these things filled, it'll happen.
Oh, yeah.
So I would suggest going to either Karen or the mayor on behalf of this commission.
Okay, who's Karen? Karen, what's her last name?
Karen Bowling. Do you, Daniel, do you agree?
I agree, and I would also include, and I don't know why I'm blanking on his name right now, because it's the
Deputy Chief of Staff.
You're also giving names. It's
Darnell.
The Diversity Inclusion Officer.
Dr. Ahmed.
Because I know when during the transition, it was discussed that he was also looking at making sure that there was more opportunities for diversity on boards and commissions, so that could be an also person that has a interest in helping in that.
Well, then my proposal has served its intended purpose.
What's the name again?
Parviz Ahmed.
It's pronounced.
Well, I don't know how to spell it. Okay.
It's pronounced Ahmed, but it's A H M E D.
A H. Say it again.
A H M E D. But the A H in the Pakistani language has a K sound. Or is that Arabic? The A H, is that an Arabic pronunciation?
It sounds Arabic.
Be on the spot here. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So, I appreciate. Thank you all for the input.
Rockman Johnson. It's not R. A-K, it's R-A-H.
Gotcha. All righty. Is that all for new business? Great. Commissioner's comments? Going around.
Happy New Year.
I've already made my comments.
Question for the chair, actually. I believe Mr. Freeman was the last invited person that we had.
Is that correct, Jeff? Okay, so yeah, okay. So
now that we've heard from Mr. Freeman, from...
Sickler.
Sickler.
Sika Hodges.
Sika Hodges and Mr. The other Mr. Freeman, I guess, because he's two Freemans. Freeman and Freeman. And we've kind of gotten all of their input. I was curious if we have collectively as a commission... thoughts or recommendations that we want to draw from all of their information that they've given us. Because it's been useful, but I didn't know whether or not we were going in any direction with the information that they provided. Because that was the original intent when we invited all of them to come speak. So just putting that out there as a conversation.
I think specifically you said it's directed.
Well, the first question was directed to the chair. The second one was directed
to everyone. Okay, yeah. First, if there's, you know, I'm happy that they did come out. It has been great. I think I might miss one or two of them, but it's been great. Today was great as well. I'll get you guys feedback on anything you guys want to, you know, we want to send out an email or anything we want to have an email sent to the council or president council, anyone, you know, based on what we've seen and what have you, all the feedback, let me know. And then secondly, any other people that you want to come out to speak on, you know, you have more questions about, you know, different departments, definitely let us know. We can make that happen as well. So some questions.
Well, I guess the one thing, you know, I'm brand new to this, but the one person who always, our department comes up is the JTA, how they're doing their audits and everything like that. I mean, having the CEO of the JTA coming over, is that, I mean, I don't know. It's
what the future of the JTA is, or what they're going to do with the mass mover. I mean,
I don't know. I'm not exactly sure if y'all actually need a presenter each time. Being that Jeff sends us so much stuff to read anyway.
It is. But I would just say, if anyone's curious, wanting someone to come out, definitely let us know, and we can put them on the agenda.
Yeah, that's a good point, Mr. Zavini makes, because we hear month after month, we hear some, but we don't ever do anything about it. I think it might be time to sort of digest what we've heard to
That's
see
fine.
If we want to come up with some recommendations.
Okay.
And maybe we do that once a quarter, that we'll maybe have two presenters over maybe a general topic four times a year. That would give us four topics a year,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily an in-depth study, but it would be, you know, information presented. And then maybe we, you know, noodle on it individually. And then at that third meeting of the quarter, we come up with some recommendations or things that we could provide conceptually to the city council president as that position changes upcoming in this coming July. It'll change again.
Okay.
So that might be a way for us to move forward.
Sounds good to me. So you guys want to think about it? And, you know, again, if, you know, we can, you know, type something
out. The highest ranking officer here. You just tell us what you want, Madam Chair.
Your input, everybody's input of what they want, you know, things that they want to recommend or, you know, like based on, you know, because we have the sheriff office here, we have different people have come here. So basically we can, you know, come up with a letter, what have you, you know, about, you know, recommendation or, you know, maybe something that you might like. You know, I love Daniel, but Daniel might have some more questions that he may have based on, you know, someone came out and I still feel comfortable how they're managing things. And that's okay. So feedback from you all, I'm fine with that.
And
I support it, yes.
Going through life, do you ever find that when somebody starts off with, you know, I love Daniel, but there's always a but?
Oh.
That always happens because I ask way too many questions for my own good.
Good question.
But you do, and I'm okay with that.
Oh, no, I didn't take it as
But, bad. Daniel, we still love you.
Oh.
But I will say another. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Mr. Tyson.
You know, Mitch, we've had all these speakers,
mm-hmm.
and I think sometimes we get lost and get confused or whatever in are they all headed the same direction? What's the timelines? Because this one will say, okay, we're looking at this, we're doing it now. Well, wait a minute. When's this one doing it? And they've all got to work together somehow. So I think we might need to kind of take some time to, like I said, to digest and try to put some kind of a timeline or some kind of a report together and see where they are actually at. Not, you know, this department's told us they're doing all this. We just heard from IT, they're doing all this. Where's it all on a piece of paper or whatever you want to say, okay, this is the goal, this is where we're trying to head to. Is it everybody to themselves and they'll get theirs done when they get ready, or is the whole group working together? You know, it gets confusing over, I mean, I don't remember everything from 3 or 4 months ago or 3 or 4 meetings ago. You know, I have the notes and stuff, but still, there's no. It's confusing to have the timeline of how they're all trying to work together for the good of the city going forward. But
yeah, I would say when we, and this is just off of my memory. Forgive me if my memory's not that great either. But I remembered when we first kind of started on this discussion in this road about inviting all these individuals. The catalyst of it was really when we were talking about capital improvement projects, questions about how each of these departments interacted, and how more of this information could be available to the public so they have a better view on how these projects are kind of going. So if there's any kind of theme that I kind of drew from each one of the presenters and kind of framed some of my questions, is the dissemination of information to make it more public for the people, for the public to be fairly aware about how their dollars are being spent. So at least for me, that's the one theme that I wanted to make sure that we kind of covered, because I think that's the one area where each one of them have said that they have a progress that they want to go on, but they're all kind of siloed.
Right.
Hey, that's one. Anyone else? Yes.
And one final internal matter. Do we need to look at the policies and procedures manual for updating it? Because I've never have seen it, so.
This one?
Never have received a copy of that. Unless Jeff sent it out and I just didn't know it.
I think I had asked him for it.
I generally send it out to new members.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
But I'd be happy to send you that.
If could you, because I have to go back and look to 2020 when I was appointed. So. Okay.
Chair.
Yes.
This is really outside the box. We talk about a lot of things, and when I spoke to Lasikia, she's very, very protective of what she does under directions of the council. And make disclosure, I'm general counsel for the utility contractors. I used to be a member of ABC and AGC. My question is this, is would this committee, our commission, want to hear from a JSEB, ABC, AGC, or people in the community that are going to have to build these things based on the new purchasing code? Is this going to affect, how is this going to affect them? Is it going to be more expensive? Is it meaningful for the programs that they want, which is hiring a felon or letting JSEBs having a meaningful position? Are those the kind of people that we would like to invite, who they will come, and we would ask them to review the new purchasing code? And because we have 1 year before there's any amendments.
Yeah.
I've got my own idea, you know, but that's because, you know, the underground utility contract. Is that something that y'all think might be of value to have them come before us and to address something? Because I don't, according to the sheet kit, they had 3 minutes for 1 year when it was before the council. I mean, I got that, but it doesn't work for contractors and people that are doing business like that.
Sorry.
But whatever y'all think, I don't mind helping facilitate.
I think that's an excellent idea. I think any time that we can hear from individuals who operate in the private sector on how city government impacts them, it can only be an improvement for how city government operates. So I would strongly encourage that. I support it.
I was going to say before I didn't see your hand up, but I'll definitely say I'll support it as well. I'm not going to say no, you know, no, that's not good. Of course, we want to hear it.
Just let me know how you want to set it up, and I'll try and send invitations out to folks.
And an email to Jeff, then he can forward it, and then they can discuss how to invite them. Maybe that could be the next group of invited speakers.
Mm-hmm. I can start reaching out to ABC and the utility contractors, and I'll find out who a couple of the good JSEBs or something else.
Find out who the appropriate contact person is, and then Jeff probably needs to do the actual invitation to them. Exactly. Is that appropriate, Jeff? Is that the format, or can we do it informally?
No, I could do it, okay, as long as I don't talk to y'all about doing it.
It's fine with
me. I don't think 1 month is going to be enough if we're going to do it. We might look for March so they have a chance to digest it, and it
yes.
can be meaningful, and they can think about it and see how it's going so far. Whatever y'all want to do, I'm not here to.
No, I think it's fine. An excellent suggestion.
We definitely welcome. It's definitely welcome, so I have no problem with that.
We appreciate you willing to use your contacts.
Right, exactly. So
no more contacts than me, though. That's just my guess.
We have contacts.
but yes, and also just go back into what Commissioner Daniel stated. If there is something, like he said, he felt that, you know, out of the people we've seen thus far, you know, one of the things it should be more public, should know more information about what's going on, and I agree with that. So if you guys have something on that line or something that's, since we've seen, again, a couple of people, if you have any inputs you want to, you know, address, please let us know so we can get something, you know, typed up, what have you, about the ones we've seen thus far. So you don't have to give it to me, you know, right now, but when we come back in February, you know, let us know and we can type something up about what we've seen and what we still see as a trending problem. Correct. Go ahead.
Something that I've been thinking of is that ever since I came to that first meeting is that JEA report the audits and so forth, report that they have these surpluses, yet they continue to raise rates. I think that's something we need to look at. Why do they continue to raise the rates while they're still continuing to report these large surpluses?
If the bills from Plant Vogtle, they better have some surpluses. They made some bad deals in the past, Ms. Pryor. But I don't know. That's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely something. Yeah, definitely. Anybody else before we move on? Anybody else? Okay.
Comments. Okay. Here, I got a comment. I think that under the policies and procedures, I'd recommend to you. So there's been a lot of questions I've heard. Commissioner Zaboni mentioned a few times, not sure about Tony, you know, not sure about this, not sure about that. Sometimes we grill the poor auditor's office, and he's merely, I think, the messenger.
Yes. Yes.
And sometimes he gets grilled. So even there's some things I'm not sure about, and some of the newer people here, because there's three of us here that are fairly new, mm-hmm. aren't sure about. However, there's an internal operations committee, which consists of, I believe, the chair and Jeff, I think. I would suggest that possibly from this point forward, or even with the new ones now, at some point hold this meeting, and you can, if you don't have a copy, I'll give you this one.
Okay.
Go over what is expected, and because I came on board, I didn't know what was expected, and apparently I'm not the only one. So I'd I would, it's like an orientation.
Right.
So I would suggest that if the chair would do it,
okay,
at some time in the future, do that, especially if we start getting more people on board.
Okay, definitely.
You don't want a lot of people on board that don't have a clue what's going on.
No problem. Okay. And perhaps that's something we could probably may get Jeff to send back, send out an email again. Can you do that, Jeff?
With the policies and procedures?
I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right.
You stated last month that you would appoint an onboarding committee.
That's what we're talking about. It's actually the Internal Operations Committee. It is a committee, and its responsibility is for onboarding new members. Onboarding will include a meeting of the chairperson of the commission and the city council research staff to explain the duties of the commission, and this is to be held in the month following the new appointee's first meeting.
Can I ask Jeff a funny question? In 6 or 4 weeks when we have two new members, since you said that council president has done one, he's going to do another one, are we still going to be able to use this room? Especially since Ms. Commissioner Brownsville's like,
we may have to go to the Women Roberts room.
Back upstairs.
I think we can fit a couple of more people around the table, but yeah, we're getting pretty close to full. Mm-hmm. But we will, we could
also move the tables to the outside.
Yeah,
yes.
we can get a little bit more
capacity.
All right, any more questions?
And we can move staff to their own table.
Okay, it looks like the next meeting will be February 8th, 2024.
Which is
not the first Tuesday of the month.
Because there's a fifth week in January.
Thursday.
All right. Okay. I am motion. Anybody want to go? Have a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
All right. It has. All in favor?
Aye.
Any questions? All right. Officially adjourned. Thank you.
It'll be my intent on the February 8th meeting to bring some sweets for the ladies for Valentine's Day.